palms are sweaty. Welcome to Sports City with Jay Smith. I am Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu, and I will be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6. Sorry about the technical difficulties earlier. If you were listening, the show will start right now. I would first like to introduce myself. I am Jay Smith, and I am one of the biggest sports fans you will ever meet. And you can ask really anybody that I've ever met. I am first and foremost a fan of the Sacramento Kings. Second, and a very close second at that, would be the San Francisco Giants. And third, rounding out the Bay Area, would be the San Francisco 49ers. Now you may ask, why would anybody ever be a fan of the Sacramento Kings? I'm from Sacramento. It works out. I've been to many games. And many exciting games at that. Arco Arena gets cracking for sure. And really, that's the only reason I can think of for being a Sacramento Kings fan. You know, it is the Kings. They have been bad for most of their time in Sacramento, but we will always remember in Sacramento from about 1999 to 2004. Those really were the glory days. And they really shaped who I am as a sports fan. From those days, from watching the exciting basketball of Chris Webber, of Jason Williams turning, and then Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, Bobby Jackson, all of those players on those early 2000s teams, they brought me into basketball, really, and they brought me into sports as a whole, because those Kings teams really made me feel like part of a community. Really the first time I've felt part of a sports community were those early Kings teams. And that And of course, it continued with the 2010 Giants. You really felt the community with these past Niners. You could feel the Bay Area and the thunder that was in the Bay Area. And it really has helped me become the sports fan that I am now. Now, I'm on the radio because I wanted to take radio this semester. And why wouldn't I want to take radio? I get to talk sports for an hour, usually an hour, today 40 minutes. But I get to talk sports for an hour, and nobody can tell me to stop, which is kind of an unusual thing. You know, usually if I'm talking sports with my friends, we'll talk for a while, and then a lot of times I go on and on and on, and really it's just too much. But now nobody can stop me, and I can talk sports as much as I want, and I can talk about my own sports. I don't have to talk about anything I don't want to, which I thought was a really cool part of radio. And lastly, for my introduction, I would just like to say Happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. And if you have someone, cool. Now, for the first segment, I would like to bring out King's Corner. Now, this is the part of the show that we talk about the Sacramento Kings. As I said, I'm a devoted fan, will be for the rest of my life, and I really do care about the Sacramento Kings. I really do care about the 2012 Sacramento Kings. As horrible they are to watch and as just terrifying their teamwork can be, I will love these Kings just as much as the next ones. And for that reason, I've devoted an entire segment to it. First off, I'd like to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder game. Last Thursday, the Kings played the Oklahoma City Thunder on national TV, on TNT, at primetime, and the Kings won. Now, the Thunder are one of basically two elite teams in the NBA. You don't beat them easily. It's the Thunder. It's Kevin Durant. It's Russell Westbrook. It's James Harden. You don't beat them if you're the Sacramento Kings. And then the Kings went out and did it. You saw Isaiah Thomas just go nuts. You saw really everybody. You saw DeMarcus Cousins have a huge DeMarcus Cousins game. Even Tyreek played okay at times. You know, if you've ever heard me talk about Tyreek Evans, we can get into that later. But really, for that Thunder game, it all came alive. It was Arco Arena, and it'll never be Power Balance Pavilion. It'll always be Arco Arena in every Kings fan's mind. Arco was really cracking. It felt like the glory days again. It felt like one of those games back in the glory days. And the blackout that they put on and the marketing that the Kings organization put on for that game, it kind of felt like a fairy tale. And while I know it's just a regular season game and it really doesn't matter, the Kings fans, we savor this. We like to savor this, especially with the uncertainties about everything in the future and possibly moving out of Sacramento, which is another topic, that's for another show. We savor these moments, and we really like to say, hey, those were my Kings, the nation saw them, and they put on a show, and we beat one of the best teams. On to other Kings news, I would like to bring up first Keith Smart versus Paul Westphal. Now, Paul Westphal, I can go on record as being a Paul Westphal hater from day one. Did not like the hiring. If you look at his past coaching experiences, you see he came on right away with the 93 Suns with Charles Barkley, Kevin Johnson, Dan Majerle, a team that immediately had superstars and immediately went to the championship. And you can say, wow, he already went to a championship and he got within two games of beating Michael Jordan's Bulls at their prime. Yeah, you could also say that Charles Barkley, Kevin Johnson, and Dan Majerle got the Bulls two games away from winning the championship. Paul Westphal just happened to be there the first year Barkley was there. And then Westphal goes on, he coaches the later 90s Sonics and kind of the early 2000s Sonics with Gary Payton. Again, a superstar. In his prime to later prime, he was at his best. Paul Westphal obviously kind of profiles as a superstar coach. Something, I'm not comparing him to Phil Jackson, but Phil Jackson would also be a superstar coach. He's had all the superstars, but he knows how to make them work together. Now, Paul Westphal was given in 2009, a chance to have a rebuilding team and make his team his own. And then he didn't do any of that. The Kings have never had an identity in the last 3 years when Westfall is on. Their young players like Tyreke Evans and Dante Green and even Omri Caspi from 2 years ago, they didn't develop like they should have. And he didn't do anything productive with our young players, especially DeMarcus Cousins. Cousins and Westfall had the falling out right before Westfall was fired, and that whole thing, and Cousins was defensive and Westfall was defensive, and that's a whole big thing that should never be out in the public, and should never be out in the public because it causes worry. And worry means that less people go to games. So I'm really not sure where the Kings were thinking on keeping that secret. However, DeMarcus Cousins has just gone off after Smart came in. He looks like the dominant big man we were hoping for when we drafted him in 2010. And everything his rookie year was exactly right, like they projected he was going to be. They thought he was going to be talented. They thought he was going to be a pain to move out of the post. They thought he was going to be a huge rebounder. And he was all of those things. Except he wasn't all of those things all the time. The other times, he was moody. He was whiny. He was complaining. He was just a prick, really. He wasn't a good basketball teammate at all. And Kings fans like to use the excuse, they're young, just give them time. Me personally, I'm a little tired of giving them time. We've been bad since 2007. That's 5 years to get a rebuilding project done. That's half a decade of NBA futility. And it's just not okay. But then DeMarcus Cousins comes in. And he is now, with Keith Smart, putting on a show almost every night. There were a streak of games just recently where he had 15 rebounds, probably about four times right in a row. He just couldn't be stopped in the post. And I think Keith Smart finally told him, get your butt in the post and don't move. Stop taking those fadeaways. I know you make one every four, but stop taking them. You make about 60% of your shots in the paint. That's why you should stay there. The dude is so big, and he's just so strong, and he has the mean streak that you expect from a big, strong player like that, but he can't use it sometimes because he thinks he's still a guard, which I don't really get, but I think Keith Smart gets it. And luckily, he's somehow drilling it into Cousins' mind, and it's starting to actually work. And now we get to talk about my, and I wouldn't say my, I would say everyone's new favorite Sacramento Kings player, little Isaiah Thomas. This guy is quite a sight to see. He's 5'9", which is my height, by the way. I'm 5'9", which just baffles me, really. I can't imagine someone my height playing against people like DeMarcus Cousins, those big guys. And then you see Isaiah Thomas go inside. And I remember watching a game about 2 weeks ago. I saw Isaiah Thomas go up for a rebound. I believe it was the Pacers game, and it was against, it must have been Tyler Hansborough. It was someone about 6'9". And he went up, out-timed the Pacers player, and got the rebound, kicked it out, and we had a new shot clock. And I believe we got the second chance points. That's Isaiah Thomas. That's 5'9 Isaiah Thomas going up with the big boys to get the rebound and is always, you have the cliche words like feisty, like tenacious, I guess you could say. But he exemplifies every single one of those words. And they're really not cliches when you talk about him. Kings fans, since about 2004, 2005, the end of the glory years, have been looking for the next Bobby Jackson. Bobby Jackson is, I will go out and say, the most beloved Kings player of the last 15 years, really, and probably ever. People loved him so much. He had fire. He just tried harder than everybody else. He was pretty talented. Bobby Jackson was pretty talented, but he really wasn't that better than most other backup point guards, except he tried harder, and he did every little thing you could ever ask for, And he became the sixth man of the year and one of my favorite Kings players and one of my favorite basketball players ever. Isaiah Thomas, I believe, and Kings fans believe, can become the next Bobby Jackson, which I would say a backup point guard or even a starting point guard sometimes for a contender back in the day, that's a pretty good thing to have. Now, we are going to go to commercial here. But next up, I have a little segment I like to call The Vent. You are here listening to Sports City with Jay Smith from Tuesdays 5 to 6 on radio.dominican.edu.
Yo gusto, me llamo Bradley. I'm hornier than Ron Jeremy. And if you wanna get popped in your knee, just wipe that look off your body face. You hate me cause I got what you need, a pretty little daughter that we call Mixie. And if you wanna get beat physically, it will be over in a minute if you... So she told me to come over and I took that trip. And then she pulled out my mushroom tip. And when it came out, it went drip, drip, drip. I didn't know she had the G.I. Joe Kung Fu grip. And I went, and the girl caressed me down, and that's that loving sound. And I went, and the girl caressed me down, and that's that loving sound. When that kiss mix, she makes me feel horny. The type of lover with the sensitivity. When she kiss my neck and tickle me fancy, the right kind of love on a Sunday morning. En el otro lado es donde viví, con un mijita que se llama Mexia. Su hermana sí me quiere, y ahorita tenemos un bebé. Sus padres me trataron matar, but they did not get too far. Un poco después tuve que regresar con un chingo de dinero que you know I'm a star. Fui a Costa Rica para tomar y surfear. Platicaba con la raza cause they know who we are. Si no le dio cuenta then I bet you never will. You must be a muñeca if you're still standing still and we fall. Caress me down, and that's the loving sound. We go, and the girl caress me down, and that's the loving sound. Me gusta mi reggae, me gusta punk rock. Pero la cosa que me gusta más es panochita. La nalga en el aire, if you know who you are. Pon la nalga en el aire y empieza a gritar. No tenga miedo, I'm your papi. Take your chones y los manden a mí. Levanta, levanta, tienes que gritar. Levanta, levanta, tienes que bailar. Caress me down, and that's the loving sound. And the girl caress me down, that's the loving sound. Caress me down, that's the loving sound. And the girls caress me down, that's the loving sound.
And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. I'm here now. It is 5:35 p.m. on radio.dominican.edu. And now I would like to do something I'd like to call on Sports City The Vent, where I basically just vent about something with sports. I probably care about it a lot. I probably am very... I have a lot of vested interest in it, which means it'll probably have to do with a Bay Area team or the Kings. However, not always. This time, though, it does have to do with these teams. It has to do with my beloved San Francisco Giants. Now, I will say some positives about the Giants first. Number one, I love the Giants. They're the Giants. What's not to love? It's orange and black. It should be part of your blood. That's just how it should be. And that's how it should be for everybody, I think. And number two, the Giants won the World Series in 2010. That gives me and every Giants fan bragging rights for at least the next 5 years. You see A's fans, oh, we won in 1989. We just won 2 years ago. Get over it. And we had the best championship run in recent memory. Saying all that, I would like to vent about the general manager, Brian Sabian. Now, this guy, he put together a championship team. He's been with the team for 15 years, and that's a very, very long time for a general manager in any sport, in any league, really. However, for the past couple off seasons, he's been a little bit quiet, you could say. After the championship run, you saw that, yeah, okay, you know, just bring the crew back, you know? We'll just bring the crew back. Everybody will have a grand old time. We'll sell a lot of tickets. Hopefully every lucky break we got in 2010 will come back in 2011. Unfortunately, that didn't happen like most people thought it wouldn't. Brian Sabian, on the other hand, didn't see it. He saw, oh, Miguel Tejada, you won the MVP in 2003. 2003 is pretty close to 2011. We'll give you a shot. That didn't work out so well, and neither did Aaron Rowand, who finally got designated for assignment along with Tejada in late August. One of the better days of my 2011 season. And then there's this offseason. And there's the trick, the little seed of Carlos Beltran. Carlos Beltran, I don't want to say ruined the Giants, but he kind of ruined the Giants. And you know what? Let me rephrase that. I'm sorry, Carlos Beltran, you didn't ruin the Giants. Brian Sabian being so dumb and involving Carlos Beltran, that's what ruined the Giants. Now, Brian Sabian trades Carlos Beltran for Zach Wheeler, our best pitching prospect, and really a top 40 or top 50 prospect in the entire league. That's really, really good. That's an all-star. That's a perennial all-star right there. Trades it away for 2 months of a pretty good hitter in Carlos Beltran. Carlos Beltran then hits pretty good. He hits good. He hits well. But then the rest of our offense stinks. The Giants go into a funk. They lose every game. The whole 2011 show. And then this offseason, Brian Sabian doesn't even really attempt to bring Carlos Beltran back, which was a little bit weird for a lot of Giants fans, because we gave up maybe our best prospect for 2 months of this hitter. We'd expect maybe a year or two more of a hitter for our best prospect. No. The Giants have a little thing that they like to call the rainy day fund. Now that's the budget that they have just in case they absolutely need it, and only if they absolutely need it, and they put it aside away from everything else, and they don't touch it unless they absolutely need it. Now, I would say with the worst offense in the National League, we absolutely needed it. It was kind of a necessity. Brian Sabian goes out and doesn't do anything substantial to fix this roster of last in the National League. It really doesn't make sense at all. And I just can't get over that Brian Sabian still looks at the fact that, oh, you know what? He's a player. He's a veteran. He's been there before. That doesn't make any sense if they don't put wins and put runs on the board. If they don't do that, then they're not a good player. And that's it. And he doesn't quite get that. And you'd think with Carlos Beltran being that type of player, oh, you know, he does put runs on the board. He's good. Carlos Beltran is good at baseball. Nope. He signs for 2 years, $26 million with the Cardinals, of course, so he gets to replace Pujols. You know, kind of a tall task, but still, he didn't go to the Giants, which still just, I just don't get it, Brian. you trade away your best prospect and then don't sign Carlos Beltran. And 2 years, $26 million. I'd like to say that Aubrey Huff, at the end of 2010 season, got 2 years, $22 million, and he hit around .240 with an on-base percentage of probably around .310. That's slightly above average, slightly below average in both respects. And he's making about as much as Carlos Beltran will be making. And we couldn't bring out I just don't understand why we couldn't bring out our rainy day fund for Carlos Beltran. Since, again, we had the last offense in the National League. I'm shocked that the Mariners had a worse offense than us, even though they're the Mariners. And then there's the Giants. The defending champion Giants had the last offense, and we can't sign Beltran with our rainy day fund. It doesn't make sense. However, I'm not done with Brian Sabian, because instead of signing Carlos Beltran, at the very beginning of the offseason, he signs two pitchers. Now you think, oh, he re-signed two pitchers. And you'd think, oh, the Giants they might have gotten Lincecum and Kane re-signed for long term. That's great news. No, Brian Sabian instead re-signed Jeremy Affelt and Javier Lopez, two left-handed relievers. Now, I feel like I know a little bit about baseball, and I will say that left-handed relievers maybe have, you know, in the sabermetric sense, they maybe have one win, one and a half, maybe one and a half, not usually, about one win max above replacement, which is not very good. Now, instead of having Carlos Beltran, probably a three-win, four-win player next year, we have Jeremy Affelt and Javier Lopez, maximum two wins above replacement. And really, with sabermetrics getting completely encompassing baseball, that's what matters. Those wins matter. And now we have two of the same player. I will always love Javier Lopez for what he did in the 2010 NLCS against Chase Utley and Ryan Howard. And I will always love Jeremy Affelt for what he did also in the 2010 NLCS after Jonathan Sanchez came out of the game in the second inning. Those two things will never be forgotten. However, those two things don't get you a $4 million contract and a $5 million contract. It doesn't really make sense that Sabian brings back two of essentially the same player for $8 million total. And they're relievers. Now, I know the Giants have a great reliever staff and a great pitching staff overall, and they want to bring everybody back, but it doesn't make sense for them to bring back two of the same player. And really, Affelt, however you say it, I would just like to go on record as saying I like Jeremy Affelt better. I'm not sure if that's how you say it, but I like Affelt better, so I'm just going to say it, Affelt. So you bring back Affelt and Lopez, but you don't bring back Beltran or any other offense, really. It doesn't really make sense. Now, we are going to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we are going to be talking about the NBA. Around the NBA is next on Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu.
Orchestrated for someone, someone. Cut my heart out with a feather and put an end to any extra pressure for someone. There are no life's in no hurry for
for me.
And welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith. Now, we've been talking about the Giants, we've been talking about the Kings, and that's all fun. But enough of around the Bay Area, around Northern California. It's time to branch out a little bit, but not too much, because I'm still going to stick to my favorite sport, and that is the NBA, and that is professional basketball. Now, professional basketball has had a bit of Linsanity lately, and it seems like Jeremy Lin is just taking over the game of basketball in the last week or 2 weeks. It's really incredible what he's doing. He kind of is the new Tebow in more than one aspect. However, he's the new Tebow in that he's taking over sports right now. Tebow absolutely took over sports last season in football. We all know it. We all have our own opinions of Tebow, but he took over. And that's what Jeremy Lin is doing right now. I would first like to give a little shout out to Taylor Wong, my friend here at Dominican University. Now, she called this. She called all of this last semester. I would show her, we would start to talk about basketball, and I would show her videos of Jason Williams and the Kings back in the day. And I love to show her Jason Williams things because she was a point guard. And I like to think that I try to get my game similar to Jason Williams. But then she shows me these Jeremy Lin videos, and she's talking about, oh yeah, he's Taiwanese, he went to Harvard, I've known about him forever, I'm his biggest fan. And this is when he was still with the Warriors, not getting any playtime. And now, he's the biggest thing since sliced bread, and she gets to sit back and watch the whole thing. So I'd just like to say, Taylor, well done, you called it, I'll give you this one. Now, Jeremy Lin, I would like to first make a comment on his race. And I promise, no racism here. I would like to ask, does him being Asian, he is from Taiwan, but he wasn't born in Taiwan. I believe he went to Palo Alto High School, actually, a NorCal boy, which is always good. We always support our NorCal boys. And he's come in as this Asian American, the first big time Asian American basketball player since Yao Ming. But it doesn't make a difference whether or not he's Asian or not for how good he is. And I say, of course it does. You see other guys make these kind of numbers and have these kind of outbursts, and then they turn into decent players and they are African American. However, him being Asian is just the biggest deal because he is the first of his kind, the first Asian guard to really light up everything. And it makes it even better that he is in New York City right now. And New York loves their basketball. They absolutely love their basketball. And they love Jeremy Lin down there. And he is doing all this without Carmelo or Amari. And he's making them win, which is really what New York cares about. And I really do think he's going to stay. Not quite this good, but he could be a point guard for a good team and stay that way the rest of his career. He's only in his second year right now, and I think he could stay a good point guard for the rest of his career. He has the tools. He can get to the basket. One of the most important things for a point guard is he has penetration skills. He can find an open man. I've seen a couple of pick and rolls that he runs with Tyson Chandler. All of a sudden, Tyson Chandler is one of the best pick and roll big men in the game. If you might remember him back in with the Hornets with Chris Paul, they had the most alley-oops in the league by far. And now he finally gets a legitimate point guard again in Jeremy Lin, although he did have Jason Kidd in Dallas. But now that Jeremy Lin is coming in this year, before the Knicks had any resemblance of a point guard, he's back to that form as an offensive big man. He's back to the form of a good rolling big man. And that's the type of of effect a point guard should have on a team. They should make everyone better, and he's making Tyson Chandler and other people in on the Knicks better. He's making Iman Shumpert, or Shumpert, however, he's really, I don't think he's that important to know his actual last name, but he's making him into a decent player. Now Iman is getting these open looks, and he's getting these open drives because Jeremy Lin attracts so much attention. It's kind of weird to see someone this big, this fast, but we did have a little guy named Tim Tebow, and he was pretty big and pretty fast. And I would like to make the connection with Lin and Tebow that they are very similar, not just in how big they are, but they're also both very religious people. And there's a whole big thing on Tebow and his religion and how that affects how he plays and how that affects people seeing him. But that's not come about yet with Jeremy Lin. He's more private with it. He's not kind of in your face about it like Tebow is. He's very private about it. However, his religion also affects him in the way that he's so humble. Jeremy Lin, maybe the nerdiest basketball player I've ever seen. And he talks like a nerd. He presents himself like a nerd. He's so humble. He doesn't like the attention. He wants to get out of there, out of the press conferences. He just looks like, he looks like a scrub. He looks like what you think a 12th man would look like. But then he goes out and does these type of things. Now, I don't know if he's going to get better and more personality-wise, but he is a player. And that's really all the Knicks need right now. And especially with the Knicks, everybody knows the Knicks. Everybody knows about Carmelo. Everybody knows about Amari. They're New York. And then Jeremy Lin comes in, and he really makes them into the Knicks again, back when the Knicks were good. And I'm a big Jeremy Lin believer. I will stay that way until he does something wrong. Now, to close up the show, I would just like to say that I would like to thank everybody for listening, and I would like to thank everybody for helping me with my radio show. It's been a nice show. I had a little technical difficulties, but Sports City is here to stay, and I really think that this show will get oh so much better, and this show will really be something that I'm proud of. And I think I am proud of it. I'm pretty proud of it. Now here to end the show is Icky Thump by the White Stripes.
Cars. I like really cool guitars and superheroes and checks with lots of zeros on them. I love the sound of violence and making someone smile. If you wanna know, here it goes. Gonna tell you there's a part of me. Show up for close, gonna let you see everything. But remember that you asked for it. I try to do my best to impress, but it's easier to let you take a guess at the rest. But you wanna hear what lives in my brain and my heart. Well, you asked for it when you're perusing. My time's confusing, possibly amusing. Introducing me, well, you probably know more than you ever wanted to. So be careful when you ask next time. Here it goes, gonna tell you there's a part of me. A show with for close, gonna let you see everything. But remember that you asked for it. I'll try to do my best to impress, but it's easier to let you take a guess at the rest. But you wanna hear what lives in my brain and my heart. Well, you asked for it for your perusing. At times confusing, hopefully amusing. Introducing me.